Return to Camp Blood, episode 19, Cloudy with a Chance of Snow Flurries. This episode is brought to you by FridayThe13thFranchise.com. Be sure to head over to FridayThe13thFranchise.com for up-to-the-minute news about anything and everything Friday-related. And by ScareFest 8. You can go to ScareFestCon.com for convention dates and ticketing information.
ScareFest, the largest horror and paranormal convention in the United States, returns to the Lexington Center September 11th through the 13th. Meet over 80 of your favorite horror and paranormal celebrities. Plus, there's a costume ball, seminars, movie screenings, and lots of scary merchandise. For more info, visit TheScareFest.com. ScareFest, September 11th through the 13th at the Lexington Center. Be brave if you dare, but don't come alone.
Welcome to another episode of Return to Camp Blood, the only podcast recorded on location at the Pinehurst Diner. I'm your host, Chris, joined by my fellow counselors, E.
What's up, everybody?
Eric.
What's up, y'all?
And Oz.
What's up?
Tonight, we have a very special guest with us. He played Billy from Part 5 and is the pride of Unger Institute of Mental Health, Mr. Bob DeSimone. How's it going tonight, Bob?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
All right. We had a few technical hiccups, but we finally made it.
Yeah, we did.
So, yeah, Bob, it's great to have you on the show. I know I've talked to you a little bit in the past, but I thought, some of the conversations we've had have been great, and I thought it'd be good for the show. So to jump right in, I was curious, how was it that you came to be involved in the Friday Part 5?
You know, my brother Tom, a lot of you people know my brother Tom. He's a director. Actually, he's retired now, but he was a director back then. And he was signed on to direct Savage Streets with Linda Blair. And I think before they started shooting, he quit. For whatever reason, I don't remember what it was about, but he quit. And Danny Steinman, who, of course, wound up directing Friday Five, came in, and I played Mr. Meeker there. And Danny took me aside after that and said to me, you know, I'm looking for a small group of actors I can depend on, you know, a lot like Martin Scorsese with Robert De Niro and Harvey Keitel and Joe Pesci. And of course, I love Danny, but he was no Martin Scorsese, and I'm no De Niro, but you never know. You know, you could climb the ladder, and that's where these B movies start. You hope to get in one and keep moving up the ladder and in there. So I said, Danny, anytime, give me a call. So that was that. And a little time passed, and I basically quit the business. I had started my own business, and it was doing well, and that was that. And my brother called me and said, Danny Steinman, he was reading Hollywood Reporter, Danny Steinman was signed to do Friday Five. And I was out of the business. I'd been in the business between drumming and comedy and everything and acting, and I just moved on, but I gave Danny a call. And he freaked out and said, I've been trying to find you. Your agent said you left and this and that. Long story short, he said, all I got left are two parts, you know, a guy in the van at the very beginning and then a guy who shows up to pick up Lana, gets his head sliced. I said, okay. He said, can you do me a favor and make that one guy? So I said, yeah, I'll make it one guy. So he sent me the script, and I basically wrote the scene that, of course, when the guy showed up at the diner, he said the pride of the Unger Institute of Mental Health. Well, that was tying in the guy driving to Billy, and that was that.
The scene
inside the car, I just improvised. They gave me the cocaine, and they, you know, the stunt driver drove up, I jumped in, and they took the other door off, put the camera, and I just improvised that scene as I went. And surprise to me, it caught on.
Now, was that stunt blow you were doing, or?
Yeah, that was stunt blow. Actually, it was, now I don't know, you know, I don't know from experience, mind you guys, but they would cut cocaine with what's called manite, and that's baby laxative. And that's what that was, baby laxative. And you poop these tiny little turds. It's bizarre. Tiny. No, I'm kidding. But it was manite. It was baby laxative. And you're snorting, that does nothing. It doesn't do anything to you, but that's what it was. Was there more around the set? Of course. I mean, that's kind of, I hear everybody talking about that.
With those, I mean, I sure wouldn't want to hit that outhouse after Demon, I'll tell you that. those enchiladas are killers.
So that's how it came about. I did that. Danny gave me the last two rolls and put them and tie them together. So that's how that worked out.
So did you do you have any like behind the scenes kind of interesting or you know you're pretty you're a pretty funny guy. You got any stories that you can tell, you can share with us from being on the set?
Here's the deal. You know, I've talked to a lot of people about this, and I was on the set for 2 days. I was in and out because basically, in my head, I was out of show business, and so I was in and out of there. I worked 2 days, one day on the scene with the in the van, and the next night at the place with the car. But there was one incident that happened. It's not really funny. It's interesting. And I've told the story before, and I don't mean to, upset anybody, but the girl who played Lana, I can't remember her name. She was a very nice person. Do you remember her name? You guys probably know.
I know who you're talking about, but her name is escaping me right now.
Well, she was, we were inside that, little cafe. That's not far from where I live, up on Mulholland Highway. And we were inside there. It was a cold night. For California, it was cold, but it was a cold night. We were in there while I was setting up the scene for the outside shot, the stuntman and everything. And I was talking to Danny, and he asked me how my brother was. And I said, Tommy's doing good. He's shooting a movie right now. And Ray Sharkey was in this film. And I was at the time a big fan. You know, he passed away from AIDS. And Ray was a guy, he starred in The Idolmaker. And I just loved that movie, and I loved him in it. My brother gave me a call, and he said, I'm shooting a scene with Ray Sharkey. Why don't you come out to the set, and I'll introduce you. So I was really happy about that. But when I got there, unfortunately, the word on Ray was that he was really involved in heroin. And by the time I got there, he was, and he was so out of it, the poor guy, that I didn't even bother going up to him and introduce myself. He was pretty much out the window. They were having trouble just getting him to do the scene. So fast forward to being with Danny that night when we shot the scene at the diner. I mentioned that I saw my brother at the movie he was doing, and I mentioned that Ray was so whacked out on heroin that I needed to get a chance to introduce myself. He probably was unable to even speak other than his lines. And the girl that played Lana was standing there, and she looked at Danny and I, and she said, you talking about Ray Sharkey? And I said, yeah, the poor guy's pretty screwed up. And she said, my husband, Ray Sharkey? Oh, man. Danny and I just looked at each other. And where do you run? Outside was cold. We were inside there at the little table in the diner. And I looked at her, and she said, he just had a slight problem with Valium. And I said, no, I said, I'm sure it was, and my dad, And so that's that's about it. There was one other little story. You got a second?
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
So the scene up in the beginning of the movie where I bring the kid up, and I tell him, again, there were no real lines. I was just supposed to open the door, but Danny from the original movie, Savage Streets, liked what I did. He said, just wing it. When the camera goes, do what you want. So I said, okay. So I did the Tommy, I don't care. I don't give a shit. Then the girl came walking out to get him. And while she was standing there, I was just in character. So my character was a scumball. Let's face it. I was reading a Playboy in the truck. So I was eyeballing her up and down. The way they cut it, you don't see me. But in the scene, I was eyeballing her up and down, and she stopped in the middle of the scene. And Danny said, what are you doing? And she said, he's making me nuts doing that. And he said, use it. I mean, like, you're an actress. Use it. You know, be in it. Use it. So it kind of pissed me off that she stopped the scene. So when we did the scene again, I don't like doing them. I like doing it fresh. One time, if we can, let's get it done. You know, other than that, you start thinking, and then you're not acting anymore. You're thinking, okay?
Right.
So I was a little pissed, and I eyeballed her even more. Again, you can't really see it, but when she left and turned, that's when I grabbed my nuts, and I pulled my ear, and I flapped my tongue at her. That I was pissed. That's what that's all about. So there you go.
That was great. And hey, you know what? You were checking her out, but you know what? With good reason, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah,
when a chick looks like that.
I mean, yeah. You know, I mean, all she had to do was think of me as a scumbag. You know, and keep doing it. That's what an actor does. I mean, if something comes up, it's like when somebody in a scene drops a pencil, you don't say cut, you pick up the pencil and keep going.
Right. You know, she should have just rolled her eyes and, you know, I mean, like, yeah, is that the first time she's ever been checked out by a dude, you know? I mean, come on.
Yeah, who knows?
Hollywood in the 80s, really, and she got offended. Wow. I've got a question. Was that Tom Morga that whacked you in the head with the axe, or was that someone?
You know, I don't know. That was a dummy, and I wasn't even there, you know? I do remember they freaked out because when I showed up, they went, holy shit, we got a dummy that doesn't have a bald spot. And they had to go back and put a bald spot on the dummy. That's why I shaved my head. I started looking like an accountant. I hated it, so I just shaved it off. Yeah, they had I really don't know who swung the axe. It may have been just an extra, or maybe it was that guy. I'm not really sure.
So, Bob, what are you up to these days?
Well, you know, I'm semi-retired. You know, I married late. I married when I was 48, and I have two daughters, Amanda and Gianna, 19 and 16. So Gianna's in college, and Amanda's in college, and Gianna will be moving into her junior year. And we bought a place just upper Cape Cod in Plymouth, Mass. So we'll be going there once Gianna graduates high school, we'll be going there in the summer and then coming back here for the winters, because I'm not going to spend a winter in Massachusetts. But I'm originally from Mass.
So. Don't blame you.
Yeah.
Yes. But I'm semi-retired. I go in a few hours a day. I'm in the process of selling the business to someone. And when I do, I'll be hanging in as a consultant, but I can do that, you know, by phone anywhere. So I'm not doing much these days, just playing with the hot rods and biding my time, doing a little work. That's about it.
Living the American dream.
Of course, I'm playing music all the time. I'm really, my first love is drums. So I'm drumming all the time, different bands.
So did you wiggle your tongue at Stevie Nicks when you played with Fleetwood Mac?
No, I did not. I was 24 at the time, but no, I did not flip my tongue at Stevie Nicks. But we had a good time back then, man. We really did. We had a good time.
I bet.
Yeah.
So what kind of music is it that you got that you play? Is it like jazz?
Back then it was country rock. Our band, the best. I'd say if you wanted to compare it to somebody like Crosby, Stills, Nash, kind of like that. In fact, the critics called us a cross between Crosby, Stills, Nash and The Band. You guys remember the, well, you wouldn't remember The Band, but do you know of The Band?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so we had a very funky sound, but also pretty harmonies, you know. But right now, I've always been a blues guy. So the band I'm in now, in fact, I just started a band. And we're doing a lot of very funky R&B, a lot of blues, a lot of down home swampy New Orleans stuff. We got a great female singer, Kara Turner. So we're going to be out pretty soon. We're rehearsing right now, and we'll be out in about a month or two. But back then it was country rock. That was a big thing.
What's the band called that you're with now?
It's a working title. And I'm calling it Kara Turner and Midnight Ruckus.
Awesome.
So
yeah, nice.
I'm the band leader, yeah, and that's the name I want to give it. And if they fight me, I don't know. It may wind up staying. it may wind up staying Tara Turner and Midnight Ruckus. She's just the best. She can tear it up. She can scream it out, and she can sing beautiful ballads, good funky stuff. She's great. And we got Ian Espinosa. That's the funny thing. Ian was in the band with me back in the old days, and we teamed up again after 40 some odd years. And it's great. It's just a great band.
So before we let you go, is it true that you don't watch any of these movies? Like, what is it? You've only seen the movie that you're in like twice.
Right. And right.
yeah, pretty much.
Well, but you know what? I get once my email got out there, I got deluged with emails. And so I give people my office address. And they send things to me to sign, or they ask me for autographs, and I don't charge $20 for Christ's sake. Come on, I mean, if you're gonna flatter me and ask me for an autograph, I'm not gonna charge you for it. You know what I mean? I'll sign a picture and send it out. I appreciate it. And the thing is, I really get to like a lot of the fans. A lot of them will write me on Facebook or private message me, and if I have the time, I mean, I always answer. It may not be right away, but I answer. And I do appreciate it. It's really, it's flattering, and it's nice to know that people like your work. And I've gotten stuff from people all over the world sent to my office, a Freddie mask, a hockey mask to sign, and all kinds of stuff. And some guy goes on vacation all the time and sends me gifts, like refrigerator magnets and bottle openers. It's strange.
So what's the weirdest thing you've ever received from a fan?
Well, are you talking a music fan or a movie fan?
we'll go with any. Well, the weirdest thing.
Let's not talk a music fan. That's all I'm trying to say. and believe me, all of them I was very happy to oblige. But the weirdest thing a fan ever asked... No, one guy asked me on set, he gave me a phone number and asked me to call on his friend's birthday and scream Lana into the phone and then identify myself. And I just made believe I never got the message. I thought, because this is what happens. Somebody sends me an email and they send me something to sign. And I got to tell you, I get wonderful letters. I get all kinds of letters from people. And I have a file. I give them to my secretary, and she saves them. And we got pictures. I sign them and send them back out and thank them. But I wasn't about to pick up the phone and scream Lana. I mean, because what'll happen is once somebody gets my email address, then I get 50 more requests. I understand what goes on. All you guys talk to one another, and that's cool by me. That's fine. You know, but I'm not going to be calling people every 20 minutes yelling Lana. You know, I got a wife and kids over here.
Maybe you should start charging by the minute to, you know, do that. Per message.
Get yourself a 1-800 number, 1-900
number. Yeah.
Well, I got to say one thing, Bob. You know, I mean, yeah. I'm a long, long time, lifelong Friday the 13th fan. I've seen every movie several times. And if someone was to ask me, who's the one person out of the entire franchise of Friday the 13th that you wish had more screen time, I would have said Billy from Part 5. Because
for all the reasons
that we've talked about, I mean, from the very beginning where, like you mentioned, where, I mean, you had me cracking up the entire – I mean, I'm 12 years old in a movie theater with my dad when I went to see this movie. And from the very beginning, I mean – you go from the beginning where it's really creepy with Corey Feldman and walking through and Jason comes out of the grave to, mm-hmm. you know, he wakes up in the van and there you're looking at a porno magazine. You don't even have to say anything. And I'm cracking up. You know? I'm like,
hilarious. Don't get out. Yeah. Don't get out. I don't give a shit.
I mean, you're a talent, man. I would love to, I mean, and if you did stand up, I would love to come watch you do stand up.
Well, you bless your heart, man. That's very sweet. And that's why I love all the fans. I mean, every fan has been great. They've always been very courteous and very kind to me and said great things, the letters I get and all that. And I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. I really do. You know, I started in music and then I went to improv and then I went to stand up. I worked the Comedy Store and the improv and all that. And then from stand up to movies, and then from movies I got the hell out and made a real living, you know. Right. I just didn't have a lot of, like, I worked at Letterman and Jay Leno and Seinfeld, but certain people get breaks, and, you know, the dice roll a certain way. You do get breaks, you don't get breaks. And it's also how you work the business. And I worked with those guys on the same shows with them, but I did not really at that time understand how the business of show business worked. So, and then I moved on, but I'm good. Things are good now. I have no complaints. You know, no complaints at all. I'm happy. Things are good. And it's been a kick with all the fans. It's been really something. Ever since it started a few years ago, it's always a kick. I always get friend requests on Facebook, and it's fun. All you guys are a lot of fun. Maybe I'll start watching these movies. I never did. Maybe I will. Maybe there's something to it. There must be. There's a lot of fans. You know?
Yeah, they're
great. I mean, there's a lot of convention. I mean, I'm an avid convention goer. I've been to a lot of conventions, uh-huh. and I've met a lot of, you know, cast members and stars from the movies and stuff. So,
yeah, I've turned all those down. I get offers, I turn them down. Maybe I have to talk. Maybe I'll pick up. I don't know. I always get called. They want me to come out and do them, and I don't know. I'll see. I might. I'll let you know if I do.
Yeah, I'd love to meet you in person, please. Man. It'd be great.
If you accept, just say, these assholes from Return to Camp Blood convinced me that I should do this.
And we'll come do a live show at that convention.
Maybe. I got a wife and kids too, bro.
Hey, I got an ex-wife and a couple of kids, so.
Well, all right, Bob. It was a pleasure talking to you, sir, and I appreciate you taking the time out of your evening to talk to us. Mm-hmm. I know you got a car show to get to, so we're gonna let you go. But again, right. We really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
Hey guys,
Mr.
pleasure was all mine, really, all mine. Thank you so much.
Well, all right. You can support the show by rating us on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever the hell else you use to listen to us on. If you want to support us financially, you can check out campbloodpodcast.com/donate for options. If you want to ask us a question or vindicate a theory you might have, you can contact the show by sending an email to feedback@campbloodpodcast.com. You can also text or leave us a voicemail at 757-637-0216. Until next time.
You're going to Camp Blood, ain't you? You'll never come back again. It's got a death curse.
Return to Camp Blood is a proud member of the Tangent Bound Network.